So, we're here. We're here to learn Parshas Vayetzeh. Parshas Vayetzeh, a brand new beginning. New beginning about Yaakov Avinu starting his journey in the dark of the night, escaping his brother Esav, who's about to kill him or wants to kill him. Rivka and Yitzchak, his parents, who he'll probably never see again, are telling him, go, you gotta run. Heart-wrenching, you know, very, very sad event. And very sad event. And that's how Yaakov begins. That's what Yaakov is. Yaakov is always holding on to the heel of Esav. Esav's overpowering, and Yaakov has to squirm his way through to survive, you know, an emblem of our years in exile. And Esav's out to kill Yaakov, and Yaakov has to carefully adjust, and he gets the message that after the blessing of Abraham was given to him, Birkas Avraham, he's told by his father Yitzchak, Rivka convinces Yitzchak to, they finally see eye to eye somewhere in the Parsha. Parsha's told us, after the whole divergence that she's davening in one corner, he's davening in another corner, she loves Yaakov, he loves Esav, they never talk, you don't see them talking in the Parsha, she undermines, if you will, Yitzchak's plan by clothing Yaakov in Esav's clothing. And finally, she approaches Yitzchak at the end of the parasha, last week's parasha, of course, told us. And Yitzchak tells Yitzchak, you have to give this message to Yaakov. And Yitzchak basically comes to terms with the fact that Esav is who Esav is, and that he has to face the, you know, the hard facts, the evidence that he was wrong with his choices or philosophies, if you will, about his children. And he gives a blessing, and he has to give the blessing, because he's the bearer of the blessing from Avram, and he gives it to Yitzchak, Yitzchak gives it to Yaakov, and Yitzchak has to be the one to tell Yaakov, continue on your journey, because Yaakov is, of course, the one who's going to bear the blessing of Avraham and continue and bring forth the Jewish people. And this is the beginning of the Jewish people, Parshas Vayetzeh, going out. And the Torah tells us that Esav is going, that Yaakov is going out from Beersheba, which is not necessarily where he was. It's not clear. The Medrash is confused about where is he coming from. That's a whole other discussion. There's some reference to really he was in Hebron. What's he doing in Beersheba? And they're going out from Beersheba, and he's heading towards Haran. And we very famous story. We all know it. It says Vayifga b'makom. He reaches the place, and Rashi tells us that place was Har HaMoriah, Mount Moriah, the Temple Mount. Vayalan Sham, in the top pasuk, it's at the top of the page 1. Vayalan Sham Kiva HaShemesh. He slept there because the sun had come. The sun had set. So something unusual happens to Yaakov. We all know, I'm just trying to, you know, dramatize it. We're familiar with the story, but it's important to feel the story also. And the sun has set suddenly. So not only is there the darkness, if you will, the darkness of the times for Yaakov. It really is darkness for Yaakov. Actually, the sun sets unexpectedly for Yaakov. And then it says, okay, so Yaakov acts. His first action outside of his father's home. The sun sets, he's responding to the events around him. And the response is, Vayikach me'avnei ha-makom, he took from the stones of the place, the very top line on page 1, Vayasem mirashosav, and he placed them above his head, literally, like mirashosav, around on top of his head, like where he would lay his head. And then the pasuk continues, Vayishka b'makom ahu, and he laid down to sleep in that place. And Rashi tells us he didn't sleep for 22 years because he was learning in the yeshiva of Shem Be'Eber. But the first recorded fact that happened was that Yaakov Avinu took stones, rocks, from the place where he arrived, the bolded text, Me'avnei HaMakom, Vayaseh Mirashosav. Okay, so we read the story, we know, Vayachalo, he has a dream, there's a ladder, there's angels, da 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 da. God promises him, he makes a vow he vows in his dream, he speaks to Hashem, he has a vow. It says, then in Pasuk Yudches, this is like seven psukim later, line two, Vayashkein Yaakov baboker. So Yaakov slept through the night. He had this prophetic vision during the night. And he wakes up in the morning. Second action that Yaakov does after going to sleep, second event, Vayikach es ha'eben asher sav rosh hasav. He took the rock which he placed above his head, or above, near his head. Vayasem osama tziva, he basically picks it up and erects it as a monument, and he pours oil over it, and he basically declares that God is his God, and Hashem should protect him, and he makes these promises to Hashem that he should return safely.
Were these maybe the same rocks that Abraham used when he made an altar in the same place?
That might be. I don't know. Perhaps there's a medrash like that. I don't know if I personally know of a medrash like that. I'm not familiar with that, but interesting. I don't know. So, what I want to accomplish tonight, I have two Rashis that I want to share with you tonight, a little bit different than what we've done in past weeks. We're doing another aspect of Rashi tonight. And that is to use Rashi's understanding, at least in the first Rashi, to use the Rashi that we're learning tonight, quite a famous Rashi, to learn it as a guide to getting into the roadmap of what a Yaakov is about. Meaning, as we all know, Rashi is sharing with us a Medrash. The Medrash is loaded, chock full of lessons that Chazal, our sages, want to teach us about Yaakov. This event is not a one-time in history event. This is Yaakov Avinu. This is what we're about. This is the Jewish people in exile. Not with Yitzchak, not with Rivka. Away from the Kedusha, away from the sanctity of Eretz Yisrael, away from the sanctity of the Tzaddikim, Yitzchak and Rivka, being alone in the darkness of the exile, being chased. And these activities, right, you can all empathize with Yaakov Avinu, and and these activities that he's doing are monumental. Excuse the pun. And we want to take these events, we want to take these descriptions that Rashi is teaching us to amplify what Yaakov experiences in the exile. That's one of the things we want to do. We don't want to put aside all our skills that we've hopefully been developing along the way. And we want to ask some critical questions on Rashi. So we're going to learn this famous Rashi. Does anyone know what the question, I'm sure most of us do, or at least some of us do, what are the questions that are contradictory in the bolded text? The first pasuk says one thing, the second pasuk says another thing. Sure.
There's many rocks in the first one, and there's one rock in the second one.
Right. And the Torah is very specific that it's the rocks that he put by his head. So it's not some other rock. It's not like, and he took a rock, some other rock. It says the rocks, he took from the rocks of the place and put them around or surrounding his head, where he would lay down. There is a Tisha B'Av connection, actually. Some people sleep with a rock under their pillow on Tisha B'Av because of this verse, which is the Yaakov in exile, but we should only have some of us. But in the second verse, talks about Ha'evan, the one rock. So there's a contradiction. An obvious question is, well, is it one rock or is it many rocks? And what's the message? Right? I mean, plainly obvious, we're all familiar with it. Yes? Yeah, okay. Yes? Are you familiar with this question? Yes? Donnie, have you heard about this before? No? Okay. So this is a contradiction in the pasuk. First it says some rocks, and it says many rocks. So instead of having you find the issues with the pasukim, I did that so that we can move along tonight. Okay, here we go. Rashi. 10 lines of Rashi. We're going to read it slowly. Vayasim Rashosav. And he put the stones, this is going on the first Pasuk, Rashi says. And he took the stone and he put them around his head. Rashi, line 1. Asa'an kimin marzev. He made them like a gutter. Meaning he placed them, maybe placed them in a formation that would be protective, maybe sloping. That's how I understand Rashi. Some sloping formation. He didn't just put them on a circle on the floor. He put them in some formation around his head. We're going to come back to these words in Rashi in a moment. You'll see there's a secret in Rashi over here. Saviv l'rosho, line 2. Around his head. Why? Line 3. Sheyarei mipnei chayos ra'os. Because he was scared due to, you know, wild animals, basically. Scared of animals attacking him at night.
I don't know if that makes sense, though. I mean, if you're out in the open and you're tired and the rocks are on your head, the rest of your body, I mean, how does that protect you?
Ask Donnie, what's Rashi talking about? How's that going to protect your head? What's that going to do? And I love that question. I personally love that question. But also that question happens to be asked by the Taz on Rashi, the Divrei David. He asks that question. How's that going to help him? He's only protecting his head. What about the rest of his body?
Right?
Okay. So, good question. Excellent.
So just the whole event is strange. That when you're tired, you think you want to go seek somewhere to sleep out of the open, but just to lay down and put rocks around your head.
He was, basically, the way that the Pasuk describes it, is that he was on his way, learning like Rashi, like the Ramban, but basically he was traveling in Eretz Yisrael, out of Eretz Yisrael, and before he knew it, things changed. All of a sudden, he found himself in a different place. You know, the world turned around. He was suddenly going the wrong way. He ended up on a mountain, Mount Moriah, and it's the sunset.
You know, I want to put rocks around my head.
What would you do?
Find a cave to sleep in.
But there's no place. You're in the middle of a mountain, and it's the sun setting. You're unfamiliar territory. What do you do?
Not put rocks around my head.
What would you do?
Something other than that.
What? You're in an open area and you're on a mountain.
Around you.
What do? You have to build shelter. That's what he's doing. Yeah.
But not with rocks around your head.
What else is he supposed to use?
Trees, branches.
There's nothing up there. I don't know. But the idea is that he's building some shelter and presumably he's staying around the head and the question is why not around the body and so on. Yeah. Great. Yes, Al.
No, the rocks, again, might have been rocks that we used before by Abraham.
Okay, so maybe they have some significance.
Some holy significance.
Okay, yeah, I'm just not familiar with the source that says that, but that's a beautiful idea. Line 4. Hitchilu merivos zuim zo. The rocks started fighting with one another. Okay. So now we're in the Midrash, obviously. The rocks weren't fighting. Obviously, rocks don't fight with one another, but Rashi's sharing a midrash. They started fighting with one another. By the way, Rashi's putting together two separate sources, incidentally. That's important to know. I left out the sources. But one is from one midrash, one is from another midrash, and Rashi plucks one midrash, puts it first to explain what he did, and then he brings in another midrash. What's the question? Why? Why did he just explain what he did? It says in the Pasuk, he put it around his head, finish. Rashi starts to explain that they started fighting. Why is he doing that? Why is he bringing another midrash?
To get to the point about the one.
To get to the point about the one rock. Okay, let's see that. So he says, line 4, Yichilu Meriva Zo Im Zo. They started fighting. Zot Omeret, line 5. This one says, line 6, quote, Alai yaniach tzadik rosho. The tzadik, the righteous person, he should lay his head on me. I should be, you know, I want him to be basically protected or lay his head partially or whatever on me. I want to be the one. Line 7. Zosomeris, and another one says, another stone says, Alai yaniach. No, on me. He should rest his head on me. Line 8. Miyad asa'an HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Immediately God intervened and made them, line 9, Evan Achas, one rock. God made them one rock. God intervened and made them one rock. Line 10. V'zeu shenemar, and that's what it means in the pasuk when it says in the second pasuk Yud Chet, when it says, quote, Vayikaches ha'eben asher samar rosh hasav. He took the stone which he placed there. That means when he went to sleep at night, there were many stones that he put there as protection. Sometime during the night, I guess, or as he was putting them together, when he went to sleep, at some point, the rock started fighting. Hey, move over. Let him put his head on me. You know, something like that. Okay, fine. And they're fighting, and then Hashem intervenes, and he puts them together, and when Yaakov Avinu wakes up in the morning, the rocks are all one rock. And he erects it as a monument. So says Dr. Hartman, what do you say? Then why does Rashi bring in the second medrash? Why?
So he can explain how the many rocks became one.
Why the many rocks became... Well, he wants to explain the contradiction in the psukim, right? Is that more accurate?
Yeah, that's right.
That the first verse says
how
many rocks...
with many, and we ended up with one.
With one. So Rashi right away says that they what? They started fighting. God made them... Which is a midrash. Now Rashi avoids midrash, usually, when he can, to explain the text. Meaning... Rashi will bring in Midrash. We know Rashi's approach is to explain things simply, as straightforward as possible. But Rashi has no resort. He can't find the answer to this question. He's compelled to bring a Midrash to answer the question. So Rashi says, what can I do? I found the Midrash. The Midrash says that, you know, they were fighting, God intervened, and they all became one rock. So there's a question on this Rashi, on this second part of Rashi. And that is, and if you have a question, please share. If you have a different question, the question is, when do you come up with this question on the pasuk?
At the second one.
Yeah. When you read the second pasuk, you say, "One second, didn't I just read? You flip the page back. Didn't I just read on the seven psukim ago? It says that there were many rocks. So why then is now say that there's one rock? So there, Rashi should have written, hey guys, you know, the reason it's one rock is because the rock started fighting. That's where you should bring the Medrash. Why does Rashi bring the Medrash before? Right? And note, Rashi put together two Midrashes. The first Midrash tells us that he made it like a gutter around his head to protect himself. Then Rashi brings a second Midrash, they started fighting, to answer this question. So... that's another question on Rashi. So, simply stated, maybe Rashi's just trying to, like, you know, once he's on the topic of the rocks, telling you how they were created, so Rashi's now trying to, you know, resolve the difficulty in the pasuk coming up with regard to the rocks. Okay, fine. That's a little bit... So we have some technical questions on Rashi, on the pasuk, even why does he put it around his head? How does that help him? Rashi claims that it's because as a protective measure, how does that help him? Okay. Before we get there, I want to share just one interesting gematria. For those of you that enjoy gematria, numerical, count up of the letters, I want to just share with you one gematria, and then I want to reflect a little deeper into Rashi. Okay? Line 1, Rashi said something interesting. He said, Asa'an kemin marzeiv. He made them like a gutter. Now, if you're familiar with the gematria, the word marzeiv, gutter, is used in the Mishnah and in the Gemara, you know, in different places, but it's an unusual description a little bit that he made the rocks like a gutter. That's a little bit of an odd, I would say, shelter, or say, I don't know, a little, I don't know, wall, I don't know, a mound of rocks, I don't know, I mean, the word gutter, it seems out of place. What's the gematria of the word marzeiv? Does anyone know what the gematria of the word marzeiv is? The four letters over there.
249.
Because mar, mem, is 40, right? We all know. Yud is 10. Yud, chaf, lamed, mem. So mem is 40, resh is 200, Zion is 7, and Bez is 2. Altogether 249. And we know that in a person's body, there are 248 limbs. right? Ramach Evarim. There are 248, that's a mystical number. And we also know that if you count all the bones and joints in a person's body, you come to, in a male body, 248 limbs. So 249, Rashi might have chosen this word because it has the gematria of 249, which indicates that it was more than the limbs, meaning it's going to protect him. It's going to be something beyond his physical body. So maybe that's why Rashi chose the word Marzeh. That's just a little cute thing that you see in Rashi. Sometimes you can pick up on some nuance. So that would answer Donnie's question partially, that it was surrounding all of his limbs. We're focusing, though, on the ones around his head. Okay, that's just, I just wanted to throw that in. If you enjoy that, great. If you don't, you can put it aside. Okay. Okay, can I ask you, please, to look at the Rashi, and I know the translation's not written. Line 1, you made like a gutter. Line 2, around his head. Line 3, he was worried about the animals. Line 4, they started fighting. Line 5, and line 6, 7, they all fought. They said, this one, head on me. Line 8, Hashem says, okay, I'm going to intervene, make them one rock. Line 10, that's the explanation to the contradiction of the pasuk. If we're using this Rashi as a roadmap to understand Yaakov, this is what Yaakov is doing when he's entering the exile. He's taking rocks from a place, from the place that he encounters. In this case, it's Har HaMoriah. He's taking rocks from the place, and he's making them, and he's putting them around his head. And Rashi is describing what's going on. What can we learn further about the template, or the roadmap, or the, if you want to use the words, siman avot, maaseh avot siman lebanim, that what our forefathers did kind of is a sign for the future times? What does it tell us about the spirit of the Jewish people in exile? What does it tell us about what we're concerned about? What does it tell us about anything? Does anyone want to share some insight from this story? What do we see about Yaakov Avinu? Leah, all eyes are on you. Okay. Okay.
She was good.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, we'll start with her.
You know, first of all, that one, he was adventurous. And, you know, he's out there by himself. You know, he has really all he has to protect him. Well, that shows that he was a God-fearing man. He believed in God, and he's out there pretty much by himself and with nothing much to protect him with. And
so why is he so scared if he's really, what is he scared of? If, you know, okay, God's running the world, you know, okay, the situation is kind of, you know, dark, if you will, you know, he's on the mountain alone. That's Rashi says. Rashi says on line 3, "Sheyarei mipnei chayos ra'os." He's scared of the wild animals. What's he scared of? What's he scared of?
Future.
Yeah. I'm
sorry. The future.
The future. What do you mean?
Well, he sees probably darkness or something, and you know, I think where I get the message is it's like Hashem will always intervene and protect. So when there's like the stones were arguing, that could be something, a metaphor for, you know, strife or trouble. And Hashem immediately intervened, stopped it, and he used it to help the tzaddik.
So Hashem intervening into, so it's a metaphor for the struggle, and he's worried about the future.
When there's struggle, it says Hashem will always be around to help.
Okay.
He'll be there to.
Hashem's there to help. Yeah. Absolutely. What else? What else do you see? Do you see anything else in this story, in this episode?
I think he might have been, you know, the fear might have come because if he was starting out and he had a direction and suddenly he found himself in a different place than, you know, he thought he was going to be, and suddenly, you know, it was dark, that would, I don't know, it would tell him that something special is happening here to him. So And this is before he had the dreams.
This is right before he had the dream, right?
Yeah.
So he's taking clues from the change that he has to act, he has to do something, and something's about to happen.
Yeah. That's
okay.
What I would think. This is.
Okay.
It seems like God intervenes and says, you know, your protection's not going to come from these many rocks, but from them coming together as one for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever the reason is, it seems like. And all of Rashi says is he saw that they were fighting, so he put them into one. And what does that do to solve the problem? I don't know.
So they'll stop fighting.
Yeah, so he doesn't like fighting. He doesn't think you're going to get your protection from these rocks that are fighting with each other. It seems like you're going to do better if we get them together into one rock for some reason.
He also took these plain rocks, and then it became one rock, and then he made it into a mizbeach.
Right.
Yeah.
So kind of, there was elevation too, from the ordinary.
I'm not sure, but I'm just going to throw something out that we know that Yaakov is MS. And do we know that yet about him? I'm not sure, but that is his way of being, his attribute. Thank you.
We saw that in the previous parsha, where Yaakov is not willing to, you know, deceive his father. Yaakov is, you know, the one, the bearer of the Torah and so on. In the previous parsha, we've seen those attributes come out a little bit.
Right, so I'm just throwing out, you know, the rocks around his head, so maybe he's protecting his brain, and that maybe the brain is an attribute of the Jewish people, that in terms of, you know, like Abraham was chesed, he was like the heart, and Isaac is judgment in. But with Yaakov, maybe the connection is the head is the most important part for him. And that's why it needed to be protected.
Okay.
There's a comment to that. If you read the Torah never refers to the brain. It's only the heart. And so the concept of the brain was not important at that time. Now, in the 1000 AD, the brain becomes important. So Midrashim, I guess you find the brain entering. But where did this whole thing take place? You have to say, where did it take place? On what particular piece of land did it take place? Was Abraham there? Was there Did that take place?
Yeah, you suggested that. That's possible.
Yeah, as if they build a monument there, was God, did God do something very special on that particular place? Is the presence of God particularly strong in that particular place?
We do find that Yaakov is surprised when he wakes up. He says, "I didn't know this is a holy place. I never would have slept here." Right? Doesn't he say that? He says, I had no idea that God was here, so it wasn't overly apparent to him. Yeah.
So now it became apparent.
Yes, please.
It seems strange. He definitely got to this place not by accident. It's a very special place, unique place. Place with most kiddush of them all. But he seemed not to understand it when he first got there. So he lost something of that moment. Moment of darkness. So there was a moment of darkness and he doesn't see this place, and this place with big kiddush is something special. And only the light of the day, well, the part definitely dreams.
Right.
That's let him understand what it is.
I know another way that should be chayos usually represent different nations that were enemies of Israel.
Right, based on nevuah different things.
Right.
We find that the animals are representative of different cultures, let's say in the Gemara Megillah,
the
dog, the right. Right.
So I don't know if that, the reference here is to that. He doesn't say that, but you know, it comes to my mind.
So I think this exercise, what we say, or what we reflect on in this Rashi, this itself, Dayenu, this itself is a study of Rashi. Meaning, this is another aspect of Rashi that we really need to get into. You know, when we talk about studying Rashi, there's the skills of Rashi and so on, but we need to know, like I've said probably by now four times, it's a fourth class, but we need to know that Rashi is the bearer of the Mesorah, of the way we, the glass through which, the, you know, whatever, the spectrum through which we see the Torah. And the ideas of the Torah are in Rashi. If we want to make a connection with, like I explained once before, with through, looking through the Gemara to get back to what are those nuggets of the oral law of the Torah Shebal Peh. So we learn the Gemara in order to excavate, if you will, and to unearth all these gems that came down from Sinai. So too, when we study Rashi, we are uncovering the Mesorah, the understanding, the deep understanding. And it's like the secrets of the Jewish people of history, of how to understand the world, reality, how to grasp our environment, are all in, they're basically in the Chumash, in Rashi. That's how we can understand it. So if we want to, and to me, as an educator and as an individual, it's very important for me to express the fact that we need to connect with the Parsha. You know, it's not enough that we read the Chumash, we read the Torah in Shul, or that we, you know, we need to really connect with it. We need to realize, and you'll excuse my Hasidic leanings, but we need to realize that there's an influence that comes from the weekly Parsha to the Jewish people. When we read the Torah, this is not Hasidic, it's Kabbalistic. It's written by the Ramchal, who was not Kabbalistic. It was not Hasidic at all, but this is a fact. It's a mystical fact, if you will, that the light of the Torah radiates upon the Jewish people each week. And the lights of the Parsha radiate upon the Jewish people. That is a fact. That is a fact. It's published in non-Hasidic books, if you will. If you like Hasidic, you don't like Hasidic, but that's the mystical approach, and that's why we read the Torah, the Parsha, every week. So, to connect, if you will, you want to connect with the nuggets of you know, those aspects of the Parsha, it's through learning Rashi. Reading the Psukim don't always radiate to us the depth of the Parsha. It's through reading Rashi, and of course, beyond that, you know, if you go to Kliyakar class or, you know, something else, but those are basically the gateways.
Usually he's elaborating on Rashi.
He's taking Rashi, he's asking a question, Rashi. Right, like the Ramban did, and so on. Mm-hmm. And that's where they're starting from. So, I want to share with you some of my thoughts on this Rashi, and I appreciate all of your thoughts as well. And that, to reflect on the deeper metaphorical associations of Rashi, page 51. So, reflecting on that is part of studying Rashi. It's a very important part of studying Rashi. If we will, if you're an educator and you speak educational language, then we have, if you will, the cognitive domain, the way we develop the mind of the student. We want to think, how to think, and how to analyze, and so on, and all those sort of skills. And then there's the affective domain, to develop an attachment. It, you know, it's healthy for us to develop in everything, develop an association, and a feeling, and an attachment, and a love for some things, or not love other things, whatever we're trying to develop, an appreciation. So when we're studying Rashi, the skill of studying Rashi is not just a cognitive skill. There's an affective skill as well. We should be passionate and empathetic and softened. Our hearts should be softened, and we should be able to seep into what Rashi is saying. That's part of studying Rashi. That's another way, or another dimension of studying Rashi. So what's Rashi teaching us here? He surrounded his head, he was fearful around his head. And Leah, I agree with your you know, your development, that it's around the head. There's an emphasis on the head over here more than the body. And Donnie, the Taz, who asked the question that you asked, which is what he's around his body, he says, of course he's surrounded his body. But the reason, and this is how he answers why Rashi brings two midrashes right here, the reason Rashi brings two midrashes here is because, of course he surrounded his body, but why is the Torah emphasizing the head? Because something happened with the rocks around the head. That's what's bothering Rashi. Rashi's bothered by actually three questions. What did he do, and why? That's one question. Number two, why does the Torah emphasize the head so much? It's the rock that you put around his head, the rocks of the head. I mean, okay, you could say, you know, it's trying to specify and so on, but the Torah is trying to emphasize something. This is not just technicalities. The Torah is stating Yaakov Avinu in exile. Around the head. What's with the head? I mean, there's a deeper message that the head represents something. The head of Yaakov Avinu represents the mind and the Torah of Yaakov Avinu, and the highest aspects of Yaakov, which are in exile. That head that just studied Torah for 22 years, you know what's going? On the ground. It's going on the ground. That head that just came out of the yeshiva of Shem Ve'Eber, you know what's happening? It's dark, and it needs to be, if you will, laid to rest on the floor. This holy head of Yaakov Avinu that studied Torah non-stop for 22 years has to lie on the ground. That's what Gullus is. That's the exile. That the head, the high point, the elation, the whole pinnacle of Yaakov Avinu, the Torah study, suddenly it gets dark, he's on his way, and the head needs to go to the floor. And so that's another question, Rashi. And then obviously the third question was, why that, you know, many stones versus one. So that really did surround his whole body, says the Taz, explaining Rashi and answering Donnie's question. Really did surround the whole body. Just that there was something special about the ones around the head. What was unique about the ones around the head? So first of all, he surrounded his head because he was worried about wild animals, chayot ra'ot, you know, attacking him. Meaning, like you rightfully pointed out, the chayos ra'os are usually the nations of the world that are out to, they're those that hate us and those that want to destroy us. So there are two types of animals out there, if you will, those that hate us and those that are willing to go out and destroy us. Yaakov Avinu is worried about that and he wants to protect his head. His whole body, so to say, could be dispersed. You can break my bones, so to say, but you can't, you know, break my spirit, if you will. You know, you can break and destroy the body of Yaakov Avinu. But the head of Yaakov Avinu cannot be destroyed in the Golos. The head of Yaakov Avinu, the Torah, that's what's going to carry Yaakov through the darkness. It's his study of Torah for 22 years that needs to be protected. That's basically what the message is. I just wanted to complete that. Sorry. You want to say? Go ahead, Al. What do you want to say? Okay, so let me continue. Then, the problem is, when the head is being protected around there, so then the issue is that the rocks that are there to protect the Torah, then the question is, well, how do we protect the Torah in the Golos? Each one's going to say, I will be the protector of the head of Yaakov Avinu. I know the way. I'm the Hasidic. I'm the Litvish. I'm the Sephardi, I'm the Ashkenazi, I bear the Torah. No, I bear the Torah. The Tzaddik, the Yaakov Avinu, the pinnacle of the Torah, when it's in Golos, it's going to rest its head on me. And in that situation, the head won't be protected. Because if the rocks are not coming together, the building won't stand. The gutter, if you will, that he built, which is Reish Mantes, which is 249, that protects more than the body, protects beyond the body, is not going to last. It's going to fall apart because they're not sticking together. The only way to do it is for God to intervene. But this is such a deep lesson of a Jewish history. We all try to preserve our heritage in the Golos. But the reality is that we don't get along. And if we're not going to get along, we're not going to preserve So whether you want to do it, and that I want to do it, and he wants to do it, and she wants to do it, everyone wants to preserve the heritage, but it's not going to be preserved. Because we're all fighting. How can it be preserved? It can only be preserved if we're together. Hashem has to intervene to make us one. That's how difficult we are. That Hashem has to intervene to make us one, and it's on that oneness that only Hashem can intervene on, that we can then thank Hashem when we wake up in the morning, if you will, in the time of redemption or clarity or whatever we want to call it, that we can then put it up and say, Hashem, you know, get us through the gullus. And they're different, and that's not the morning, by the way. He's still on the run, right? But there are times of clarity. But there's a unity that's intervened by Hashem. Hashem makes it that we need to be united in the gullus. And there are times during our history, very bitter times, where Hashem has to intervene to make us feel like we are one. Whether you like it or not, a Jew is a Jew. And so on, right? So, that is a Rashi. That's Rashi. That, I mean, it can make you cry. I mean, that, I mean, I'm sharing my insights on Rashi, but that sort of direction of learning a Rashi, that is, you know, the beginning, if you will, of learning a Rashi. Asking these technical questions and trying to look for a gematria in Rashi, try to understand what does it mean metaphorically, every line, and so on, and try to associate it and take it to heart. That's part of learning the Rashi. I hope that was meaningful. I just want to show that that's also part of learning the Rashi. And that's what Rashi's intending. And, you know, so Rashi's writing for the 5-year-old that doesn't have the depth that we might have, you know, into understanding life experiences and Jewish history. And Rashi's also writing for us, because it's also intended. That's what Chazal wanted, and Rashi will put together everything for us to understand it. Al, I'm sorry, do you mind?
There's another explanation of why he put the rocks around his head.
Yes.
If you've ever gone camping,
yes,
and he's not in a tent, he's outside.
Yes.
Well, what happens when the sun comes up early in the morning? So you go right in your eyes.
Okay.
Right? And you put up some rocks that keep the sun from going into your eyes.
Okay. I hear that. Certainly overnight, it seems like he's scared overnight about the, you know, like Rashi emphasizes why. So at the bottom I put, you know, what are the lessons that emanate from Rashi? You know, what can we learn from Rashi? But if you flip the page, I think this is a deeper question. That's why I put it on side 2. And I didn't want you to see it until now. I don't know if you took a peek at it. What are the lessons that emanate from Rashi's interpretation of the wording? That is where we get it. The therefore statement. Whenever we learn, and we're going to close up now, whenever we learn anything like deep, and we're going on a tangent and we get deep into something, we need to come back with the therefore statement. Like many times in the Gemara, in order to understand what's going on, we're now far away, so that therefore, now let's plug it all back in. Okay, so now I understand my original difficulty. And one of the original difficulties of Rashi is why the different stones. Do we now understand that? What lesson can we learn from that? And also, why does the Torah emphasize the head so much? If that was one of the issues troubling Rashi, at least I suggested that that's one of them. So, what lesson is the Torah telling us? Forget Rashi for now, if you will. You know, Rashi's trying to teach us the Torah. We're not coming to learn Rashi. We're coming to learn the Torah. Right? We're coming to learn the Pasuk. Right? So now it's time to move away from Rashi. So with what Rashi taught us, let's plug it back into the Pasuk. And what are the lessons that we are to learn from the emphasis, from the selection of wording of the Pasuk? And that's more of a cognitive skill, if you will, of understanding how to learn Rashi. Because once we've learned Rashi in the effective and the cognitive as well as we can, and we plug it back into the text, then we hear the text directly speaking to us. That's how it should hit us. That's how it should resonate with us, that the text is speaking to us directly. Okay, so here we are. I want to just conclude with one thought. We did not have a chance to study the next Rashi, which is perfectly fine. But I want to encourage, you know, I, obviously, we don't all sit around on Shabbos or whenever we get a chance and study Rashi all week. Obviously, we don't. Many of us don't have the time, or we just don't do it just simply because it's not part of what we do. But if I could challenge you, and this is a challenge, you can take me up on the challenge if you want, I want to challenge you to find a part of the parsha. This parsha is wonderful to do it, like we've explained. Find a part of the parsha that there's some deeper level that you can go in. Maybe look at the Rashi and see what Rashi is saying. And maybe try to understand a deeper level in the Rashi, if you find one that is meaningful to you, if you have an English text of the Rashi, or at least an English text of the Chumash. Find something in the parsha that you can take to a deeper level, to a higher thinking level. Build it out of the context. How does it relate to Jewish history? How does it relate to me? How does it relate to us? And that's ultimately actually what the Torah is intending. Is for us, part of the intention is for us to actually extract these lessons and make them relevant to us. And Rashi is helping us do that. So that's my challenge to you. I'd love to hear what you come up with. If you see something in the parsha, if you examine the parsha, you look at the parsha, you read Rashi, I'd love to hear what you come up with. Maybe you could share it in class next week if you'd want. Just a thought on something you saw in the parsha and how you took it to another level. Or why you, it would be even equally as good or even better if you see something you saw in Rashi and you took it to a different level. That would be great. That's part of what we're trying to develop over here when we're talking about studying Rashi a little deeper. Okay, thank you, everybody.